What's up, everybody? Welcome back. Happy Skews Day to you. It is June 23rd, 2026. We're recording this on Monday, June 22nd at about 2:15 p.m. on the West Coast. I'm Trey, and that's Mark. How you doing, Mark?
I'm good, man. Looking forward to the show today. We'll be talking about some, reflecting. All of us, we've all loved to think and talk about for the entirety of American history, the reflecting pool. It's on the tip of everybody's tongues all the time, front of mind. And maybe some Iran, Middle East stuff later. But before we get to that,
it's funny that that's the footnote. Like, and I know you were being cheeky just now, but it's funny to be like, yeah, well, first of all, up top priority number one, the reflecting pool and everything surrounding that, and then maybe later if there's time, maybe the war in Iran if we get to that.
We're going to order things. How important things are to the president.
Yeah.
Right? But also, like, I'm worried we might run out of time if we start having fun with the reflecting pool. So I don't want to promise. I don't want to overpromise and underdeliver here. Mm-hmm. But hopefully, we'll get to some Iran stuff later. But first, I want to talk about the Supreme Court decision that dropped last week, because, like, I find the Supreme Court fascinating, because if you just follow them on their own merits, it's like there's this little private debate club, right?
Mm-hmm.
That has these really esoteric arguments about the dumbest bullshit you can imagine, but then however they decide, a bunch of people's lives are ruined, if not ended.
Right.
Right. So, like, it's tough to remember that this stuff matters. They just had a huge argument that's based upon how fucked up people used to get in the 1700s. And that is relevant for reasons we'll explain. But I am a longtime person who's been fascinated by how drunk everyone used to be and how we don't ever consider that when we talk about history, right? Like, we talk about the Boston Tea Party. No one mentions that, like, oh, yeah, everyone there had a bottle of whiskey that day.
Yeah, I've seen the inventory for the Second Continental Congress or something, like the booze inventory that they had for, you know, getting together and founding America. And it's, like, just a comical amount of liquor and wine and mead and whatever they were getting drunk off of back then. But yeah. Well, yeah, well, you know, being alive has just been just a real nightmare for most of human history. So, like, the very first thing we figured out how to do was get drunk.
Yeah.
We've been doing it ever since.
Well, I think the one thing you got to remember is they were self-medicating for how fucking miserable their lives were. They were talking a cracked tooth was a permanent fucking health condition.
Right.
For most of human history. So, I think the statistic I remember seeing, and I have no idea how to measure if it's true or not, but it was true that people used to be really fucked up. But I think the average American in the 1700s, person who lived in the 13 colonies, drank like a pint of whiskey a day, and that's across men, women, children, right? It's the reason people almost overthrew the government when they tried to do the whiskey tax, the whiskey rebellion.
Right.
So anyway, they had oral arguments back in March about how turnt the founding father used to get off Henny in the 1780s. And that was relevant to a case called United States versus Hemani. Let's go with Hemani. So basically, the origins of this case is in August of 2022, the FBI raided the home of a guy named Ali Denial Hemani, the 25-year-old who was born and raised in Texas. His parents are originally from Pakistan. I gather his family's ethnically Persian because his brother lives in Iran, and they would fly back and forth to Iran to visit him. And the federal government started surveilling them because they know people in Iran, and accused them of supporting the Iranian government against the United States, like basically being like covert, like a terror cell, basically. And they raided his house. Now, they did not find anything relevant to that.
Uh-huh.
But they did find a gun. And then Hemani confessed he also had 2 ounces of weed and a little bit of coke. Mm-hmm. But the weed was the big thing. He said he smoked weed about every other day or whatever. So, again, this is in Houston area. This is Texas. He had a Glock 9. Very, very legal in Texas.
Right.
Some cannabinoids are legal in Texas. Weed is still technically illegal, but not federally. These are federal agents. But, I mean, like that has nothing to do with bearing the federal law. But, like, there's a law on the books since 1968 called the Federal Gun Control Act. It makes it illegal for any person who is an unlawful user or addicted to certain controlled substances, which includes marijuana, to possess a gun. So the question I propose to you, Trey, because this is in Texas, is it the weed makes the gun illegal, or right. does the gun make the weed double illegal?
Right. the former, I think, right? I mean, it's Texas. Like I said, guns are...
Yeah.
Fine. But, yeah, I did know that was a thing, but I guess I thought, because felons can't own guns, right, ostensibly?
Yes, which we all know because of Hunter Biden.
Right. Yeah.
Because Hunter Biden, the Hunter Biden's legal case was he had a gun, but on the form he filled it out, said he wasn't a drug addict, while in fact he smoked crack fairly often. Mm-hmm. So, but then that becomes really interesting, because if he had written "I smoke crack" on a federal form, he would not be a criminal.
Right. Right.
Under this law. So if you're following, this is all like this is just also fucking insane. In February 2024, this went to trial, and a federal judge dismissed the indictment because it's all fucking stupid. He said they determined the law was unconstitutional because, let me quote here, it was not disarming marijuana users was, quote, not consistent with the nation's history and tradition of firearm regulation. The reason he used that language is because the Supreme Court a couple years ago ruled that basically any law that wouldn't make gun control law that wouldn't have made sense in the 1780s is null and void. Right? So here you got a federal judge being like, Supreme Court said, there's nothing in the 1780s about you couldn't have a gun and smoke weed, right?
Is that when the Second Amendment was written or something?
Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. Okay.
So basically it's like the idea they made this all up. We have such a history of AR-15 ownership in the United States. So how dare everyone fucking interfere with it? So basically, in order to figure out whether prohibition on drug users possessing guns passed in 1968 is still legal in 2026, the court spent oral argument pondering how drunk the founding fathers used to get in 1776. And let me quote here from Neil Gorsuch. Quote, John Adams took a tankard of hard cider with his breakfast every day. James Madison reportedly drank a pint of whiskey every day. Thomas Jefferson had 3 or 4 glasses of wine every night. So, yeah.
Okay. So, is the thought process is we're trying to look at whether or not we think this is something they would have been on board with at that time. Mm-hmm. And because they were big drunks, they presumably would not have been on board with prohibiting users from having guns. Is the art, you know, like.
Right. This, another thing they're trying to parse is what's the difference between an alcoholic and a drunkard?
Right. Yeah.
So, if a person's drunk every day, does that make them an alcoholic? And they decided we can't quite be sure. And this is called. I will dub this the Supreme Court's Ric Flair corollary.
Okay.
All right. So, Sam Alito, like, who's allegedly, this is all about the originalism. You're familiar with the term, right? The legal term.
Yeah. Right. Just like. I mean, kind of what we're talking about, right? Like, it's just all about what they meant at the time when it was written at the Constitution. There's no, like, looking at it through a modern lens or anything. It's just...
Right. It's a thing conservatives invented since the 1980s, basically, to pretend it was always true that we never considered the law would ever change, right? The law written, which the Founding Fathers would have thought this was stupid. The Constitution was their second attempt at writing a founding document in like 15 years. They didn't think we would just like be frozen in amber. We'd never fucking fix the motherfucker when we encounter problems with it. But like,
yeah,
whatever.
Well, there's an amendment process, you know, that's like part of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So you can make changes. So, I mean, obviously. Yeah.
So Sam Alito is an allegedly huge originalist, but when it comes to like trying to persecute brown people, which Ali Hamani is, he's just like, we basically have a chance to lock up a Pakistani dude. You fucking can't pass it up, right? So let me quote here from him. Heroin was invented in 1874, cocaine 1855, methamphetamine 1893, fentanyl 1959, Alito said. We don't know what the founders or what those who adopted the Second Amendment or the 14th Amendment thought about illegal drug use per se, which is true, but only because that stuff wasn't illegal. And he's saying heroin was invented in 1874 because he doesn't want to admit that the founding fathers were very familiar with opium.
Mm-hmm.
Right? They probably called opium something like the Chinaman's pencil shavings or some shit, but they definitely were fucking familiar with it.
Yeah, well, dude, back then, I mean, I don't know about that far back, but definitely in like the 1800s and shit, for sure, it's like children's cough syrup had fucking morphine in it, basically, or whatever. Like, it was wild.
All their wives were on laudanum to cope with hysteria and depression they got from having never had a fucking orgasm.
Right, yeah. Yeah.
So it was very popular to inhale ether to get high in the 1700s. Mm-hmm. I had to go look up the history of drug use to find this out. But like the British people were already very aware of weed, which I'm assuming the founding fathers would have been too, because Pakistan, their sailors and also Pakistanis that immigrated to England were very familiar with the Hindu Kush, right? they knew about indica. They fucking grew it and they smoked it. So yeah. I don't like. So you get? Do you know that? I mean, we knew you're familiar with the term Hindu Kush, but you know that's called that because it's from Pakistan.
No. I mean, you know. No, yeah. I don't know what any of those names are. I'm honestly kind of surprised that any of them are based in any kind of like sensical thing. Do you know what I mean? As opposed to just like rad sounding shit or whatever.
When your grandparents talk about how weak you used to be, they're talking about, because we only had Mexican weed, which is all sativa. It was American hippies who smuggled indica back from Pakistan. They flew over and sewed it into the lining of their clothes and smuggled back in the United States so we can get that good, help you sleep weed, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, anyway, we get way off track here. But the law is struck down. The Supreme Court's like, you know what? Fuck it. Y'all smoke weed and have guns, I guess. Because Ben Franklin liked to get blitzed off schnapps and dance around with like French panties on his head. You can now have a gun and drugs as long as you're high while you have the gun, right? That's a big difference. So Khomeini's free to, you know, to get framed by the FBI for something else because he's one of those fundamentalist shit Muslims who owns 2 ounces of weed for personal use. Jesus Christ.
Right.
What
so,
a dumb fucking country.
So this means like the Trump era SCOTUS or whatever is basically like absolved Hunter Biden then?
Yes.
Yeah, right. That's fine.
There's an alternate universe of how stupid this could have gotten where Hunter Biden, who would have been convicted under the Biden Department of Justice and then appealed to the conservative Supreme Court of Trump supporters and has over conviction overturned. That was the funniest possible fucking outcome and that Joe Biden robbed us of by pardoning Hunter.
Right.
So yeah, Hunter Biden can smoke crack and wave a gun around now. Can't stop him.
Living his best life, buddy. Been tearing it up lately. Everything's coming up, Hunter. All right, we'll go ahead and get into it. Like I said, we'll be doing some reflecting of our own shortly. But first, we start with the Daily Dumbass. Matt, graphic, please. Today's DD is Trump's police state for finally starting to round up middle-aged men in bike shorts.
All right, you keep playing without sound, Matt. So what you're watching there is that guy in the bike shorts is going to try to leave, but he's going to get arrested. The beginning of that, this footage is filmed by a MAGA reporter by the name of Emily something. You're not seeing it a lot of places because she wouldn't sell it to, you know, the fake news media. But she walks up and starts filming this guy who's just minding his own business poking around the lake. The Park Service lady covers her face with a gator mask because he doesn't want to be involved in his dumb shit. And he starts laughing at the reporter saying, oh, I think this is very funny. What is this, a joke? And then he gets hauled off by the National Guard. He's a Maryland resident by the name of David Hearn. He was charged with destroying government property. He says for just sticking his hand to the pool to touch one of the blue pieces of the reflecting pool that's floating to the surface and denies the charge. Trump says he's going to get 10 years in federal prison, which, good luck with that.
Right. Okay. The reflecting pool, Trump like spent all these millions beautifying it, whatever, all that stuff, and then it got all fucked up. Now pieces of it are floating up and people have grabbed it. Those people have been arrested and Trump's talking about those people as though like they are the ones who vandalized the pool, right? Say like, we've made arrests for vandals in the pool. The implication being to idiots that like it was sabotaged or whatever and they've got proof because they've caught the guys. But all they're really doing is what that guy did, trying to just get a little souvenir, I guess, take a piece of the pool with them because it's all fucked up and floating around.
If you remember how we got here, like a month ago, the White House was pissed that no one was talking about how great they were making the reflecting pool, right? Trump made visual aids and then was holding up at like White House press, Oval Office press availabilities. He had one where it showed how big the reflecting pool was compared to the Empire State Building for some reason. Which is the reflecting pool, and the important, this isn't a tall building, it's a thing that lays down, whatever. So, then. It started being fucked up. Then people covered it. Now it's a thing people are talking about. So people go down there to look at it. But now he's got it. Like, he doesn't want people to look at it now because it's fucked up. So now he wants people to stop. So now, like, he's pretending that one of the most heavily surveilled sites on Earth. This is covered by cameras from all angles. He's flooded with a bunch of National Guards people that have been in D.C. for, like, 6 months now, 8 months, whatever. And no one sees the actual vandalism taking place. It's just people poking around in it. But let me quote here from Trump. They took some form of knife or blade and put a 250-foot-long gash into the beautiful facade of what took so much work, competence, and money to build and complete. So I guess at the bottom of the pool, someone swam along 250 feet with a box cut or something. We're talking about, I guess, Antifa now has a Snorks division.
Right.
Or maybe Antifa, or Seahorse. We've already established in a past episode that Seahorses are Antifa because they're trans, because the men lay the baby, make the babies, right?
Yes.
Quote, they also poured corrosive and destructive chemicals into the pool. I actually have a video of that, if you have that, Matt. Here's the corrosive and destructive chemicals being poured into the pool. That's the National Park Service pouring hydrogen fucking peroxide into the reflecting pool on Trump's orders to try to kill the algae. If you're not familiar with what's going on here, it's like that backfired, by the way. And whatever they're doing, all these chemicals, they killed a duck. A dead duck was found floating in the water yesterday. They're like, pull with this duck baby. He's just trying to nudge him. I don't want to play the video because it's fucking depressing as shit.
Right.
But it's funny. It's like, happy birthday, America. We're having a pool party for you, but there's dead birds in it.
Right. Yeah. So, again, what actually happened, they spent this money to make it cooler looking, they said. Mm-hmm. But it was like a no big contract to some dumbass motherfucker. They did that wrong. Okay, all right.
So we have a perpetual motion machine of stupidity going on here, okay? Because the things he wants to do all can't happen all at once, but he keeps trying to do them all at once, right? So like this is sort of tangential to this, but during the Obama administration they put in a new water filtration system, and I'm like, mm-hmm. I'm not trying to like do this thing where like Dems are good and Republicans are... It's not like that, because whoever was president at the time would have fixed the fucking water filtration system because it's a national monument, right? But Trump had that taken out for some reason no one's explained, other than he doesn't like Obama. So they drained the pool, but then they refilled the pool before the new filtration system was put in. That's where the fucking no-bid contract guy comes in. He's the one putting in the new water filtration system. But he wasn't going to have it ready by July 4th, so they just filled it up with no filtration system.
Okay.
Right?
And that's what all the algae is about.
That's part of it. That can be fixed, right? If they assume that the no-bid contract guy can fucking get his shit together. But they wanted to put the American flag blue lining at the bottom of the pool for reasons that I don't understand, mainly because a dark-colored background at the bottom of the pool will stop the reflecting pool from reflecting the Washington Monument, which is its whole fucking purpose.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever, it's still a pool, right? But a dark lining reflects more sunlight, which heats the water, which creates more of an algae bloom, right? Algae bloom. So they dump in the hydrogen peroxide to kill the algae, but guess what the hydrogen peroxide does to the blue lining? It tears up the lining so the pieces float to the top.
I mean, they ain't got nobody over there that knew how any of this like worked or could have worked before it all just happened.
Like, no.
No.
So now we have a huge tourist fucking, draw as we lead up to America's 250th birthday, where instead of getting people doing the normal thing and going to look at the National Mall and the reflecting pool, they have National Guards people yelling at people to stay away from the reflecting pool because if they put their hand in it, they will get chemical burns. Like, this is Donald Trump's fucking Stalingrad. Right, it's so intractable, and he can't escape it because he can't let go of his stupid idea, which is we should do his version of invading fucking Russia in winter, mm-hmm. which is putting a dark blue liner at the bottom of a pool in Washington D.C., which is a swamp in the summer.
Right.
But like this, otherwise, like this is just a comical example of how like what it's like to put people in charge refuse to understand anything.
Right.
But like so, but the. This past week, the reflecting pool has gone from some ha-ha, what a dumbass thing to, like, an appointing a horse to the Senate level of story because, like, the point at which state security agents start manufacturing crimes to arrest people to support the delusions of a senile ruler was the point at which this stopped being a silly, heavy-handed metaphor and started being, like, a real concern.
You know what I mean? No shit. He's saying he's going to put that guy away for 10 years in fucking prison. Yeah. Yeah. It's not funny.
I imagine he'll get Nobel by grand jury because Washington.
Yeah, right. That's what I was going to say. Hopefully, it's like a lot of the other cases that happened with all the during the ICE shit and things like that, where it won't hold up. Hopefully, yeah. But it's still pretty fucked.
He's one of at least five people that have been arrested. They have undercover people in plain clothes arresting people who reach into the pool for stuff now. Like, people are just taking out little pieces of the blue plastic and go, ha, 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 look at this, taking pictures for their Instagram, right? That's apparently a federal crime now. So, but as of this morning's count, at least five people have been arrested in connection with the alleged vandalism of the Lincoln Memorial reflecting pool. The guy who we showed a video of, his name's Davey Hearn. I mean, he goes by Davey. His name's David. The reason I know he goes by Davey is he is an Olympian athlete representing the United States, the Olympics in 92, 96, and 2000 in slalom canoeing. I'm not super familiar with slalom canoeing. You ever gotten into it, Trey?
No. I mean, I feel like I get what I know what both slalom and also canoeing is. I did not know that the two were combined into one thing, but I think I could guess what it amounts to pretty much.
I can sort of guess what it is, right? Just like you
go back and forth between gates, but in a canoe. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. So this is not Davey's first time being arrested by the National Park Police. In 1996, he was canoeing the Potomac after heavy rains. It was ordered to stop by the park police, who told him it was too dangerous. But he kept going in his canoe because that's what Davey be doing. Right. He was arrested on charges of disobeying a police officer and resisting arrest because I guess he ran away in his canoe. You can't paddle your canoe away from park police. They don't take that trait. So 20 years later, I guess they've gotten their revenge. But anyway, back then his charges were dismissed because they didn't have jurisdiction over the portion of the river he was canoeing in, whatever. But he later that year, he used his canoeing skills to help park police retrieve fishermen that were stranded offshore without life vests. So he's a goddamn American hero. Leave Davey alone.
Yeah, canoe man. The D.C. canoe man, always out there doing good deeds in his canoe. Yeah, well, like for no glory either. Nobody knows. He was just doing it for love of the canoeing game this whole time.
So part of this I can actually get behind is the cops did catch a goth. I didn't know he started goths, but apparently they're out there fucking up the National Mall. So the thing that you'll notice in this picture is it includes a variety of officers from a variety of different jurisdictions. You can't read these two. That picture, you can't zoom in and look at the shoulder patches. But those are cops from, I've seen ones from Monroe County, Oklahoma City, Oklahoma State Police, U.S. Marshals, and a county in Texas I couldn't quite make out. But you can make out the shape of Texas on their shoulder patch. And also a county in New York I can't make out. So they basically did an Iraq-level surge to defend the reflecting pool.
I mean, what? Oklahoma City cops are in D.C. right now? For what?
I guess they got a bunch of different agencies got deputized by the U.S. Marshals to like be there for the 250th celebration.
Oh, okay. All right. Yeah.
But it is important to arrest this guy for if you get this picture up, Matt. I'm assuming they charged him with having jeans that are too small. The Zoomers love the wide leg. I thought our generation had been like, okay, we proved that JNCOs were a bad idea, but I guess they're just fucking bringing
now
it back.
Everything comes back around again. I reckon. Yeah, they got to bring back the big ass pants.
They were great for shoplifting 40 ounces of malt liquor. I will tell you that. So, that's to make a comparison here, which like it's like hackneyed at this point, but they've arrested more people for touching the peeling paint of the reflecting pool than they did for people connected to Jeffrey Epstein by a large margin. Now let's get to the fun part, the no-bid contract. The company that turned the reflecting pool green is called Greenwater Services, Trey.
Well, I don't know what they expect then. Sounds they like they this delivered.
So this is a guy charged the it's not the lining contract, which is like $13 million. They gave the guy like five times the market value. This is the water filtration guy. They gave him a contract for $1.7 million. It's Greenwater Services, based in Brookfield, Ohio. And that contract, contracting records show that the firm's ultimate owner is a guy named by the name of John J. Cafaro, who's a Trump donor and a neighbor to Mar-a-Lago. So you just know they hatched this fucking scheme over a mysteriously wet shrimp cocktail at Mar-a-Lago while Cafaro's 22-year-old fifth wife rubbed his feet with baby oil or some kind of gross shit. Of note, Cafaro's daughter, her name is Capri Cafaro, fucking A-plus name. She was a Democrat state senator who fought for Medicaid expansion in Ohio. So I got nothing bad to say about her, except now she's a talking head on Fox News, because I guess that's what you do for a living. The spokeswoman for the Interior Department said that the department had not been aware of Cafaro's political affiliation when he was awarded the contract.
Again, I used to do, that's what my day job used to be, federal contracting, and they're supposed to have like a small number of justifications for being able to do something like that, you know, then they should have had to write it up. I mean, I know it's the Trump administration, so who gives a fuck? But when I was doing it, that was like a big thing, you know, like you could get around issuing forbids or whatever, but it had to be very particular stipulations. I remember one of them that I did once was if it was a Native American owned company, right? And they had, you could give the direct contract to them because, you know, it's like we did all that bad shit to them in the past or whatever. So, you know,
what news?
Throwing them a bone, I guess. But there was like shit like that. But they're not supposed to just be able to just do that, which I know it's like probably goes without saying. But I don't know. I would have thought they would have had to at least attempt to make some kind of justification for it, but apparently you could just do whatever you want, and even if people find out, it doesn't matter because the people at the top are the ones who told you to do it anyway, so who gives a fuck, I guess, but it's definitely weird to me.
I want to bet that every single member of Mar-a-Lago has at least a $1.7 million contract from the federal government to do whatever their fucking companies do.
Right.
I want everybody to see John Jacob Cafaro, if you got his picture here, Matt. And please leave this picture up for a few minutes, because we got to talk about this. What did you expect it to look like, Trey?
I mean, roughly like that. Who is the... Who's the... there's like a Portland... It looks like there's like a Portland like alt-comedy era comedian who's real funny. And that looks like him playing a gangster from like a comic strip or something.
Mm-hmm. I don't His think head is both too big and too small.
You know what I'm saying? He looks like young and old at the same time, which is always fun. I don't know if it's because it's like fake-ass wig or dye job or something, because that'll make you look weird.
He looks like he went to the toupee store, and they're like, sir, we have something that looks very natural. And he goes, no. I want people to know I can afford this hair. Give me the most luxurious, obvious toupee you've got in the fucking pack.
It was Ian Carmel, that's what I thought, although I think he's lost a lot of weight now. I think he's lost a lot of weight now, but he used to be much bigger. That looks like big version of Ian Carmel cosplaying as like a made-up UCB, you know, improv gangster character that he's doing or something.
Here's the... opposite of a plot twist here. That picture's from 2002. The reason he appears in that picture in 2002 with a news microphone in his face is because it was taken outside of a courthouse where he was involved in a corruption trial for a former congressman by the name of Jim Traficant. If you're not familiar with Traficant's whole thing, when he was county sheriff in I think it's the county that holds Cleveland, he was caught on a federal wiretap taking an envelope of cash from mobsters. And when he went to trial, he represented himself as his own attorney and argued that he was doing his own undercover sting operation, and they let him off.
What? They let him off? Everything about that was like, you know, classic crazy guy shit or whatever up until the part where he pulled that. He represented himself and said he was just doing his own, like a citizen's arrest, but for an undercover operation, and they were like, okay, you're free to go, hero.
He was very popular because he as a sheriff, it was during an economic crisis in the 80s when a bunch of Midwest towns were dying, and he refused to kick people out of their houses. You know, sheriff's department's supposed to do when people's houses
evictions.
Get closed. Evictions, He bought a lot of credibility with the people for being a populist like that. So I want to read here from the story at the time. In one case included in yesterday's indictment, John J. Cafaro, a representative of U.S. Aerospace Group, allegedly conspired with others to give Traficant $13,000 in cash and $26,000 worth of boat repairs in return for supporting the company's aircraft landing technology. Prosecutors filed charges against Cafaro. Cafaro eventually flipped on fucking Traficant. So, Trump, he's a rat, man. What are you doing getting in bed with this guy? I also want to know that he looks even worse now. If you got this picture, Matt, this is what he looks like 24 years later. that's from his own LinkedIn. He thinks that picture looks good. So yeah, he looks like his eyebrows. He dyed his hair and his mustache, but his eyebrows are snowbrow white. So I guess when we asked what brought down the Trump administration, is his buddy John needed eyebrow money to get his eyebrows done, and so we had to do this for him. So the Wrecking Ball is a green town.
Ever since he got fired by The Undertaker as his manager. He looks like Paul Bearer from the 90s in that last picture anyway. Okay, let's see. We got an honorable mention for Daily Dumbass for you, and it is
Donald.
Oh, you're right. I'm sorry, Mark's right. We do have an honorable mention for Daily Dumbass, which I'll tell you right after this. Weekly Skews is brought to you by ZBiotics. Here's something I figured out the hard way. For a long time, I operated like you could just have a great Saturday night, or you could have a great Sunday, but you could not have both, especially when you're 40 like I am now. That's just the rules of being alive, you know. But then I found out about ZBiotics pre-alcohol, and turns out ain't no rules at all. They're rewriting the rules over there at ZBiotics. ZBiotics pre-alcohol probiotic drink is the world's first genetically engineered probiotic invented by PhD scientists to help you tackle those rough mornings after drinking. So when you drink, alcohol gets converted into a toxic byproduct in your gut, and it's a buildup of that byproduct, not dehydration in and of itself, that is to blame for those rough-feeling mornings. Pre-alcohol produces an enzyme that helps to break that byproduct down, so you just remember to make pre-alcohol your first drink of the night, then drink responsibly, always, of course, and you will still feel your best tomorrow. You will, I promise you. Give it a shot. Go to zbiotics.com/skew, that's SKEW, to learn more and get 15% off your first order when you use the promo code SKEW at checkout. ZBiotics is backed with a 100% money-back guarantee, so if you're unsatisfied for any reason whatsoever, they will refund your money. No questions asked, no risk to you, so what are you waiting for? Go to zbiotics.com/skew and use the promo code SKEW, SKEW, at checkout for 15% off. Weekly Skews is brought to you by Leesa, L-E-E-S-A. I'll be honest with y'all about something. I went a long time sleeping on a mattress that had quietly turned against me somewhere along the way. I didn't even notice it happening. You start waking up a little more and more crooked every morning until one day you're just moving like a man twice your age, stiff as a board, blaming it on everything but the obvious, the busted slab of foam you've been sleeping on for the past 10 years. There's a few things worth saying about them. Leesa has got a whole lineup built around how you actually sleep, and you can take their sleep quiz and find your match in about 2 minutes. They are designed and assembled here in the USA. They come with free shipping, easy returns, and a 120-night trial. 120 nights to try it out. You got plenty of time to figure out if it's right for you. And the New York Times Wirecutter named them the best hybrid and best memory foam. They've donated over 43,000 mattresses to families in need, and that ain't nothing, y'all. So if you like the sound of that, go to Leesa, L-E-E-S-A.com for 30% off select mattresses, plus get an extra $50 off when you use the promo code SKEW, S-K-E-W. That's an exclusive for our listeners, you, the Skewers. That's L-E-E-S-A.com with the promo code SKEW for 30% off select mattresses and an extra $50 off. Support our show and let them know we sent you after checkout. Leesa.com, promo code SKEW. Sleep better with Leesa. Weekly Skews is brought to you by Fast Growing Trees. Talk about your yard. Let's hear it. You live somewhere long enough, you quit seeing it. You know, then one day you pull in the driveway and you really look and it looks bad. Bare patches, one sad shrub, probably already dead when you got there. If you start looking at like landscaping costs, looking at landscaping people and pros and stuff, that's a humbling experience. In this economy, landscaping, you call a place for a quote and you got to sit down. But that's the thing about Fast Growing Trees. They are the largest online nursery in the country, over 2 million customers with more than 1,600 varieties of trees and plants, and they ship it all right to your door in just a few days. No more driving around to 4 different garden centers all weekend. No more loading up dirty root balls into the back of a vehicle that's going to smell like a greenhouse for a month afterwards. You just click, you order, and it shows up. Easy as. Simple as, isn't it? That's what the Brits say, I think. Every plant is backed by their Alive and Thrive guarantee, so it arrives healthy and ready to go in the ground. No green thumb required. They've got actual plant experts over there. They're on call 7 days a week. Plant scientists, people that know plant stuff. They'll help you figure out what works for your climate and your space, so you're not just trying to guess your best, you know. They can have to give you actual information to go on, which always helps. Right now at Fast Growing Trees, they've got deals on spring planting essentials, up to half off select plants. And listeners to this show, you, the Skewers, get an additional 20% off your first purchase when you use the promo code SKEW at checkout, S-K-E-W. That's an extra 20% off at fastgrowingtrees.com with the promo code SKEW. Now's the perfect time to plant. Let's grow together at Fast Growing Trees. Weekly Skews is brought to you by the Americans United for the Separation of Church and State. Now, I don't know about y'all, but here's how what I always thought religious freedom is supposed to be. It protects your right to hold your beliefs and live by them as long as you ain't hurting nobody else, all right? And that includes kids, obviously. And I figured surely that, if nothing else, is something we could all agree on. Who could disagree with that? Well, that's not what's happening right now in this country. Taxpayer-funded foster and adoption agencies are turning away good families who just want to give a child a loving home just because those families pray different. Religion is being used as a tool to decide who's the right kind of person to get to be a foster parent. But there's so much crazy stuff going on, this hasn't gotten a lot of airtime, but it's true. President Trump's Religious Liberty Commission has been meeting on a regular basis, and not to protect religious liberty, not for everybody anyway. They're meeting to figure out how to push a Christian nationalist agenda in this country. That ain't hypothetical. I'm talking about real people. Liz and Gabe Rutan Ram, a Jewish couple in Tennessee, they were trying to foster to adopt until a state-funded agency refused to work with them because they are Jewish. Amy Madonna, a Catholic mother of three, got turned away because she refused to sign an evangelical Protestant statement of faith. And then Fatma Maruf and Bryn Esplin were turned away for being a same-sex couple. Look, if you believe religious freedom is supposed to protect everybody and not be weaponized to turn away qualified families who just want to foster and adopt a child, then you are needed in this fight. Go to au.org/crooked to learn more and become a member today. This fight is far from over, and every one of us has a part to play. So one more time, au.org/crooked to learn more. All right, our honorable mention for Daily Dumbass is Donald Trump for taking this long to realize he's also president of Students for a Free Palestine.
Israel's fighting Hezbollah too long, and too many people are being killed. And you don't have to knock down an apartment house every time you're looking for somebody, because there are a lot of people in those apartment houses, and they're not all Hezbollah, that I can tell you.
All right.
Okay.
A bunch of college kids got deported for making that fucking point.
Right. Yeah. Well, that reminds me of like when you said before, like when we were talking about ICE shit or whatever, about how Trump immediately runs to the defense of like the guy that shot Renee Good or whatnot. And then like 2 weeks later, he actually saw the footage or whatever and was like, that's pretty fucked up. You know, it's like, wait, that's what happened? I don't like that. You know, it's like, it's just like he moves in and out of various realities at any given point in time.
But the thought he just expressed seems like a fairly common sense thing for most people who watch the news to at least consider, right?
Yeah, right.
But expressing in American politics has been so verboten that there's literally, for making that exact point, there are a bunch of Americans who are American citizens born and raised here who are banned from entering the United Kingdom. because they're a threat to the peace or some shit. Cops literally beat kids on college campuses. A gun went off and almost killed a kid climbing through a window at NYU because kids were saying that in songs, right? And like, but now a couple years later, the administration officials are just saying shit like this. I want to play this clip from J.D. Vance. I'm not sure what happened. I mean, I can guess what happened, but they could have gone off the leash with this shit. Play this video from J.D., man.
Yeah, you've seen people in their system, Ben-Gavir and Smotrich, who have attacked the deal. And I guess my response to them would be, what is your exact proposal? And, you know, you're a country of 9 million people. You can't just kill your way out of solving every single national security problem that you have.
Look at what we've accomplished. Is this administration going to kidnap J.D. Vance off the street and send him uncharged to a federal prison for months for saying that? Because a lot of people have had that happen to them for saying that out loud. Whether or not you agree with it,
right.
It's now...
what do you think? They're just pissed off at Israel finally for some... Like, over Iran or something like that? They're just sick of their shit?
A bunch of people in Israel and Americans who were supporters of Israel are very pissed off about the Iran deal that I can't, like, we're not talking about the Iran deal, but I can't make sense of what is or is not in it because Iran and the United States are saying different shit, Israel is saying different shit, and I can't tell whether the Strait of Hormuz is open or closed. Depends on literally what minute you ask.
Yeah, I know. I was doing my Patreon thing earlier looking at various headlines, and there was a headline from the New York Times, or there was one story from 18 hours ago that was on Reddit that said Iran storms out of peace talks, right, in a rage over some shit Donald Trump said. And then there was another story from like a few hours after that that said that J.D. Vance said that it was a great day and that we were making great progress and they're getting everything we wanted and all this stuff or whatever. And so, and they had said that Iran had committed to letting inspectors back in, and Iran was like, well, I don't know where you heard that or whatever. And it's just... And it was like, I thought a deal was like done last week, but they're still actively negotiating it. And Trump's still threatening to fucking kill them all every now and then when he gets pissy about it. And there's like a 60-day time limit or whatever. So, yeah, that all seems still to be very much up in the air. So, yeah, God only knows. But there's no way. I mean, what is the best case scenario for that for us as a country, though? Do you know what I mean? Like, we're not going to get anything that improves anything for us from the way it was before we started this, right? Like, you know, like no matter what.
I mean, there's a school of thought where like he just gets some sort of token win and normalizes with Iran, and then it's kumbaya after that, because like,
sure.
I mean, like, because, like, Iran, like, part of the deal here is, like, I'm assuming that with the $300 billion that we're supposedly going to give them, J.D. Vance has said they're going to use that to buy American agricultural products. So, basically, we're paying money to them. It's a wraparound way to do a farm bailout, right?
Yeah.
And I'm sure whatever company is owned by the president's families are going to get a cut of that contract to help execute some part of it or whatever.
Right.
But, like, just letting Iran back into the world, like for the first time in 40 years, Iran's now allowed to export oil to the United States. Right? So, it's definitely trying something different. Mm-hmm. I'll give them that. Israel supporters in the United States are not happy with the fucking deal at all. And they've been very, very critical of Trump. Like they're basically been like, he hasn't come from like high up officials, but there've been threats to attack America from a bunch of people in Israel. They're very, very mad about this. So it's not clear whether like, as far as their language toward Israel, the administration, it's not clear whether they're trying to find a way out of this because they're sick of Israel's bullshit, or their way out of this is to blame Israel by pretending to be sick of Israel's bullshit. Do you know what I'm saying?
Right. Yeah.
So, but I do want to note that like where we screwed up here, after our attacks last year and building up to this, Iran, you have to get like to be like a military historian or a military strategist or whatever to get to the bottom of this. But my amateur level understanding is that Iran pivoted the way they thought about their regional defense. They invested in more drones and ballistic missiles as opposed to stuff like their navy and ships. And when they went to close the strait, they didn't know if they could do it.
Right. Because
they wouldn't have just tried it on a lark.
Right.
But they tried it as a fucking Hail Mary and connected.
Right, so now they know exactly how much leverage they have or whatever, and how much power that gives them over, like, the economy of the entire world, basically.
Yes.
Yeah, I know, that's what I'm saying. It just seems like and I know we blew a bunch of shit up. We fucking killed people over there, and that none of that hits or whatever. But I'm just saying, it just seems like we've, like, massively improved their situation and standing in various ways, you know. With I don't get the upsides to us, you know, over a war that we started for no apparent reason, you know, the whole time.
Yeah, I mean, so from Israel's point of view, like, holy shit, they fucked up.
Right.
Right.
Because it's worse for them.
They pulled us into this to try to do regime change in Iran.
Right.
Right. Because Iran was in a weakened, isolated state and they thought they could pull it off. And 4 months later.
Right.
What they were doing with the risk board of global, I'm not judging anybody's morality or whatever, but they saw their opportunity from the way people responded after October 7th to fully establish themselves as a total regional hegemon. Is that correct?
Yeah.
To be the biggest swinging dick in the Middle East.
Right.
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 With no real rivals. They've got nukes. They've got the U.S. backing. They've got the best they got the best fighter jets and bombers and shit. They got the Iron Dome shit. They felt pretty bulletproof. And like, we can make them. But now, a few months later, now the big swing. Oh, shit, we're outnumbered 10 to 1 population size by Iran. Their economy's been totally liberated. This is the opposite of what they wanted. But the quote here from Iran about their ability to shut down the strait. This Iranian official thanked Trump for making Iran realize it could throttle the world's economy. In this quote here, our enemies, God created them fools, turned that potential into reality. And this is stuff they're saying out loud.
Show me the somebody. Lie, you know. Right.
So they're trying to figure out a way to salvage some sort of win for what they did. And here's Mike Waltz, who's Trump's ambassador to the United Nations, who's declaring the weirdest victory I've ever seen in my entire life, if you're familiar with the UAE.
Yeah.
The vice president said, perhaps give this a chance and we can have a transformed Middle East. No one would have thought even a year ago that you'd have Israel and the UAE working together militarily to defend each other as a result of the next evolution of the Abraham Accords.
Well, so they were kind of forced to, but also one of the technical talks.
Yeah. And all right. So, yeah, it's like, oh, they wanted to live.
Yeah.
Right. Like, So that's to say something obvious. He's acting like it's good that UAE and Israel are now fucking like best, not best buddies, but whatever. Like they're allies in this fight. But like for the last year, people defending Israel have made the point that like, well, you guys are up in arms about, you know, like the messiness of war when it happens in Gaza or Lebanon. But look how much bloodier the RSF, what they're doing in Sudan, supported by the UAE, right? And now his point's like, guess what? UAE, the other genocidal regime we're arming, there's also an ally with Israel. Yeah, so who could have thought that?
Making a super genocidal regime over there. Getting the genocide Avengers together. It does make sense that we would be like the Nick Fury of the genocide Avengers. You know what I mean? Going back to the Indian thing.
And we keep acting like we don't know what the RSF is up to in Sudan. But like we arm UAE and the UAE arms the RSF, who used to be, if you're familiar with them, they used to be the Janjaweed militia, which is Arabic for the devils on horseback. When you have the opportunity, you definitely want to arm a group called the devils on horseback.
Yeah.
Cool shit's definitely going to fucking happen.
Yeah. I mean, that is a pretty metal rad name, not when you're slaughtering people. I mean, it fits for, I don't like it when, you know what I'm saying? Anyway.
Yeah. Devil on Horseback would have been a pretty sweet album title for a Pantera album.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Iron Maiden or something like that. Yeah.
Yeah.
But the actual genocide being done by people, I would rather that not happen. Anyway.
So anyway, so UAE right now is sort of allies with Saudi, but also what they're doing in Sudan is a proxy war against Saudi Arabia. So it's definitely a mess that we really, really want to be in. We should be involved in. When you've got like these nine-way proxy wars, I still can't figure out whose proxy the side that won the Syrian civil war was.
Mm-hmm.
I know Russia lost. I don't. The guys ISIS/Al Qaeda. I don't think we are Israel won, but also Israel's also still supporting militias in Syria and all, yada yada. None of the just. I don't want to fucking be involved in it anymore. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, of course. I feel like almost every American agrees with you and has for a while now, you know.
We did. Okay, I'm honestly impressed how stupid everyone seems to agree with you. Even people are barely paying attention. Play this clip from CBS's Sunday Morning Show if you got this, Matt.
Our CBS News poll out this morning shows that more than three quarters of Americans want to end the conflict now. Mm-hmm. 69% saying the conflict with Iran is not worth the cost. More than half, 57%, say the president's war with Iran created more than it's solved.
78% of Americans think this should end now. You cannot get 78% of Americans to agree that orgasms feel good.
Right. Yeah, I know. I've already forgotten the percentage, but a large majority believe that it's, you know, has not been worth the cost. And it's like, I don't know how it could have been, you know, but like you said, there's always going to be people on the other side of anything. So I'm sure all the people, the 21% that it solved more problems than it caused or whatever, they just, whatever, Trump said it was good, so it's good type of thing, or God only knows. But anyone else, you know, I don't know how you could be on the side of it unless you just super love just war.
It's amazing, which is like a very popular point of view in Washington, D.C.
Right, yeah. Right.
It's like, it's weird how 78% of Americans think this should end, but 94% of Congress is like, let's fucking ride this shit out, baby.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to quote here, circling back to Israel's part in this. This is an Israeli political analyst by the name of Ori Goldberg. He described the situation between the United States and Israel as not a spat, but, quote, a rift. The criticism of Israel coming from U.S. leaders hasn't arisen because they've suddenly gained any great insight. It's because the facts have become unavoidable. Everything they're saying is correct. these are truth bombs, which is one way to think of it. So I'm thinking of it is like, you keep wondering, like the primaries are happening right now, right? And a bunch of like the Washington centrists don't seem to understand why Israel and Gaza is such like a salient issue in the primaries for like something like a congressional race, right? But it's like, it's a lie detector test.
Right.
What is your point of view on this? If you say something that's complete bullshit, it's okay, fuck you. You're writing you off. You're just a liar. Right. Mm-hmm. So that's one way to put it. I've been waiting for like the reality to catch the politics to catch up with the reality, the stuff everyone's seeing on the news and in their screens or whatever. I'm waiting for this fucking vibe shift. Took way too long, to me. But like this guy calling it a truth bomb is one way to think of it, or the facts catching up is one way to think of it. But here's another way to think of it, according to Jesse Waters on Fox News, which, you know, you should not take anything according to Jesse, which you're about to find out.
Vince sent a warning to the Jews. He said, "What? Trump's your daddy too."
I don't think that's what happened at all. J.D. Vance sent a warning to the Jews that Donald Trump's your daddy too. And I don't have. We could spend the entire hour unpacking the anti-Semitic sexual psychosis happening there.
Right. Yeah. He's always good for that type of shit. He wild. Didn't like his own mom call him on the air once and was like, "What are you doing?"
His mom's liberal, so whenever he like wants to get like, you know, get a liberal woman's opinion on something so he can make fun of it, he calls up his mom and she fusses at him on the air. It's a funny bit. So they're trying to figure out a way to talk about it. So I want to play this clip of JD. They keep. The way they started to talk about Israel, they kind of sound like they're doing like ineloquent Mamdani impressions. If you got this clip, man.
You know, advocates of Israel make, or pro-Israel people in the United States, make two critical mistakes. One, on the one hand, is not delineating between America's interests and Israeli interests, because they're not always the same. But the second is always conflating criticism of a particular government with Jew hatred. Because if everything is Jew hatred, then nothing is Jew hatred. I actually think Jew hatred is very bad, which is why I think we have to be very careful about not calling every. It's kind of like how progressives for 20 years called everything racist.
All right. So I'm so relieved to hear some sort of truth out of Washington, D.C. that I'll even accept the dig and calling us stupid for thinking that racism still exists in America.
Yeah, I know. But now that's another. Yeah, just the clips that you have selected here seem to paint a picture of them. It would have to be maddening if you were one of those students that got fucking, you know, kicked out of school or whatever the hell else happened, because they're just saying stuff that, and well, even him saying you can't just say because you don't like Israel that's anti-Semitic, and it's like, that's what y'all been doing, you know, like, obviously Israel's been doing that, but also like the conservatives that have been pro-Israel for so long up until this point, that's been your number one thing to go to, you know, well, when you're talking about the Free Palestine kids and shit.
Yeah, and I'm not the first person to make this point, but when you conflate that stuff, you leave no room to call it actual anti-Semitism in a time and place when it is dangerous and rising and worse. And so what do you call actual anti-Semitism at this point if you're saying, hey, I think the Israeli Defense Forces policy in Gaza is a little bit too heavy-handed? If that's anti-Semitic, what is a skinhead kicking a pregnant woman?
Uh-huh.
Right. Triple anti-Semitic? So let me quote here. It's a Fox correspondent yesterday. The president told me he is disappointed Israel can't put Hezbollah away. He went on to say they can't do anything without knocking buildings down. He is close to giving it to Syria. He's talking about empowering the Syrian president to actually go into southern Lebanon and fight Hezbollah.
What?
Look, we're all like, Donald Trump, please do not put Syria's army on fucking Israel's northern border. I want to skip a little bit ahead, Matt. Sorry, because we're running a little bit late. So people are taking this very well. I want to play this clip from Mark Levin, if you got this. This is him talking about the Trump administration's sudden turn into anti-Semitism, according to Mark Levin.
I want to say to people in and out of the administration, stop trashing, smearing, bullying the little state of Israel, cozying up to and telling us that the enemy regime in Iran is now more rational, more moderate.
All right. Trump doesn't get too far out of his skis or that stuff, but I do think that part of the arguments for global free trade arrangements is like, you know, it makes people less likely to go to war with each other because everyone's making a nice little profit.
Yeah, and, right.
You know, everyone's fed, everyone's making, like, it's like, right. So, like, there's an argument to, like, letting Iran back into the world market will have a moderating force on its politics,
mm-hmm.
potentially. Maybe not. I don't know. But, like, we've tried everything else for 47 fucking years.
Right.
So, like, I don't know. If there is one upside of the Trump administration, is they don't have no understanding of the old arrangements, so they throw them away willy-nilly.
Yeah.
Yeah. Also, I want to point out a little Trump psychology here. But we're in, like, you know, whatever, 11 years of Trump being the dominant force in American politics, and people still don't seem to get it. They seem to think he has, like, firm political principles or alliances or whatever, which is, like, really funny to me. But, like, whenever Donald Trump sees somebody winning, he just wants to be friends with them.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter if they're winning against him.
Right. Well, you were saying earlier, it seems like they're doing, like, Mamdani light now or whatever. It's like when after Mamdani won and he went to the White House and Trump was like, this guy's awesome.
Yeah, look, he's got the juice.
Yeah, right, yeah. Trump loves the juice.
So right now, Iran is the juice. They're like, oh, they're it. They have the it factor. They're happening, baby. They're running the Gulf, right? But if you bet as much as, like, Netanyahu's bog stupid fucking administration, who bet it all on picking a side in domestic American politics and meddling in fucking Senate and House primaries and mayoral races and shit in the United States, and you bet it all on one side, and then you're like, you bet it all on the honesty, steadfastness, and political principles and ideology of Donald Trump, it's on you if you get fucked.
Right. Especially considering the other side was pretty on board with you too for most of the past forever. Like, mm-hmm. you know, yeah, it's your own goddamn fault. I'll never understand that. It happens. It's not just them, to be fair. So many people that aligned themselves with Trump thinking, like, you know, it's the scorpion and the frog shit. You know, we ain't going to fuck me. Or he's not going to turn on me or betray me. You know, I know how to work him, but, you know, yeah. It's the same thing every time.
Put yourself in Netanyahu's shoes right now. You think that, like, the survival of your country is at stake, right? The lives of 9 million people are at stake, and you bet it all on Donald Trump. Right. Which, if you want to understand why Netanyahu's in fucking hiding right now, hasn't really spoken about the deal at all, it's because he's up for a re-election soon. And Israeli furor at him is, like, kind of funny to me, because he was the most popular political figure in Israel until, like, 2 weeks ago.
Mm-hmm.
Donald Trump. He has joked fairly recently about how he should run for president of Israel. And I'm like, yeah, you would have a much easier time getting reelected in Israel than you win the United States right now. But let me read a quote here. An op-ed published in one of the country's leading newspapers, Israel Hayom, which is owned by influential Trump mega donor Miriam Adelson, shout out Dallas Mavericks, titled, "You could have been the greatest president of all, but you failed." Accused Trump of having signed a surrender agreement with a murderous and cruel regime, and accusing the U.S. president of having turned the hourglass over to a new war, of having brought about the humiliation of his country. This does feel like a vibe shift to me. I know we got to get out of here soon, but I just want to say this. Israel's national security minister, a guy named Ben-Gvir, who you heard J.D. Vance mention earlier. And I want to note, I saw this tweet because it was reposted by Jake Tapper, who is not a big fan of Israel, which I just want to, and Tapper called this disgusting. Just want to note the vibe shift here. Gvir tweeted the other day, "For every tear of an Israeli mother, 1,000 Lebanese mothers must weep. All of Lebanon must burn." That's 6 million people. 6 million people live in Lebanon, which is the closest thing the Middle East has outside of Israel to a... It's the closest Arab country to a functioning democracy. Uh-huh. They have a Christian president, whatever that matters. And out of the 6 million people live in Lebanon, only about 50,000 are in Hezbollah. And Lebanese military would love to take control of southern Lebanon, but they have a hard time rebuilding because every time fucking shit calms down, Israel bombs the fuck out of it to the point they can't control the southern half of their own country. So, it's a whole different world if the American media and American politicians stop ignoring the shit that Israeli officials say in Hebrew. But it's, you know, feels like something different's happening here. And I'm ready for something different to change, something different to happen in the Middle East, as long as less people dying.
Yeah. Yeah, that would certainly be a nice change of pace. And also Israel somehow finally wearing out their welcome with the American political elite wouldn't not hit for me either. Because Lord knows the people of America have been over it for some time, it feels like. Not that that ever fucking matters. All right. Thank you guys for watching. We appreciate it. So go to see me on the road, please. TreyCrowder.com. I'll be in San Diego this weekend, then in July, Northwest Arkansas, and in a bunch of places later in the summer and fall. All at TreyCrowder.com. You can also check out producer Matt's audio exclusive, Good Skews, Good People Doing Good Things. That's on the podcast feed of this show. It's a nice palate cleanser for you. And consider signing up on Patreon to support this show. $5 a month gets you the ad-free versions of every episode, plus two full-length bonus episodes per month. WeeklySkews.com/more or go on Patreon and search my name. Either way works. Regardless, we appreciate you being here, and we'll see you next time. Love you, bye.
Skew.